Ian, Radio Eastern listeners know you best for Easterly Winds, if I may say so, a very clever name for a program of brass band music.
Yes, but I have to say, Roger, a few people laughed when I said that's what I'm going to call the program.
I can understand why. Now, before we talk about that and how it all came about, I think we need to talk about your involvement in the world of brass bands in the Outer East. When did that begin?
That was in 1972. I actually joined a concert band or military band, and they were quite new in Victoria at the time, although they'd been happening in the United States for quite a long time. Basically, they're woodwind instruments as well as brass. I'd wanted to play the trumpet. Somehow it didn't quite work, and obviously you need a trumpet to do that. I was walking past, I think it was Joel's in Russell Street one day, and there was a trumpet in the window. Nice little outfit, it said. I went in and said that I would buy it, and the gentleman said, "Oh, how young is the gentleman that it's for?" And I said, no, it's for me. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, sir. So at the age of probably 28 or so, here I was picking up a brass instrument which I'd never played. I'd had piano lessons as a child, didn't do terribly well, but, you know, I could get a tune out of the piano. So I just taught myself to play. I've never had a lesson in my life on the instrument, but, you know, I'm an engineer. You can do those sort of things. So I joined the Croydon Citizens Bands. And I always say to people, I never realised how life was going to change when I walked through that band room door, because it's made a lot of changes. Part of it was that I got involved in the administration of the band and also at a state level, and was president of the Victorian Bands League for 8 years and president at Croydon for 24 years. So I think I've done my time in administering bands, and you learn all the foibles of community organisations.
And of course you've done your bit about to promote brass band music, because it was your view that it needed promotion, it needed on-air exposure, which led you towards Radio Eastern.
Correct, because the situation with bands is, if they're playing in the street, everybody loves it, and if you can't hear them, they're forgotten. And, you know, there's a lot of people behind the scenes keeping them going. If you wanted to get that sort of performance on a commercial basis, it would cost you thousands of dollars, but these people are doing it as volunteers. But I don't decry their value because they're volunteers. They're really doing a great job keeping music alive, and a lot of the people that go to professional jobs have come up through that particular avenue of learning to play at school, then playing in the band, feeling that they've got a great talent, and then they go and perhaps join the Air Force band or the Army band. It's not so easy nowadays because the government has cut down a lot on those sort of things. But, yeah, they go and do courses at the College of the Arts or Melbourne Uni, and many of them become music teachers, of course.
So you really had two things to offer Radio Eastern, was your knowledge and involvement in brass band music, certainly in the Outer East, and of course your technical knowledge. Was it Peter MacArthur who sort of drew you into the organisation?
Well, yes, I met Peter. Of course, he was a Croydon city councillor, and we had connections through the band with the council, of course, still do with Maroondah Council. And you know, I knew Peter, and with the interest in broadcasting, I don't know, somehow I got involved in the initial test broadcasts that were being done from Loughnan's Hill. I prepared a tape of band music and took it up there about 10 o'clock at night in the cold weather. It was played on air, and then once the station was starting to look like it was getting underway, I decided I better go to a meeting and meet the people and perhaps join the station. And I fronted to this meeting in Nunawading of the people who were trying to get the group going. And they said, "What experience have you got?" I said, "Oh, I had a job with the Broadcasting Control Board." The reaction was amazing. Mm. It was sort of, oh, because they were the people that were obviously going to grant the license back then. So, but I don't think I was able to bring anything to bear to make it work. But I knew about such things. I knew about the technical standards. I knew about how the system worked. So.
I imagine, though, that your technical knowledge was put to good use.
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, the idea was that the station was brought on air by grants from the local councils. There were five councils, the local ones. Four of them gave $10,000 and one gave $1,000. I think that one was further away than anyone else. And there was a contract put out to put the studio equipment together by Herb Lilburn and his son. And they did all that work. And the station was actually running on basically remote control. It was just putting out broadcasts. And then one day we looked at it and I said, look, if I twisted these two wires together and put a soldering iron on them, you could be on air. So that was a Saturday morning and that's what I did. And I think there was a bit of a sudden realisation that, uh-oh, now we've got to produce programs. The day after, the station was on air from the Croydon Festival.
Mm.
And it went from there. But obviously Peter MacArthur was secretary and he was looking for programs and he said to me, oh, well, look, you know, you did those initial things. Why don't you consider doing a program? And I said, well, haven't got much in the way of discs or anything like that. It might last 3 months. He said, well, why don't you do it? And 30-odd years later, it's still going.
So yes. you're 31 years old, at least your program is.
The program is, yes.
To what extent were you, Ian, were you involved in other aspects of Radio Eastern in those days?
Oh, well, I did some of the technical work. We needed to do installations. Bob McIntyre was, of course, an ex-PMG person, so He was a technician, I was an engineer. They didn't always talk the same language, but I like to think we got on pretty well. And one or two occasions, Bob says, I've got a problem. Would you like to come and help me solve it? So, you know, we would look into some of the more obscure problems that we were having. But we did try to make the station as professional as possible. One time everybody else disappeared and they said, you're the honorary chief engineer. And, of course, what happened? One of the links failed. So that caused a bit of an exercise. And that's the radio system that connects the studios at Wairina Community Arts Centre to the transmitter up on the water tower, let's say, near the Ringwood East Hospital or the Ringwood Hospital.
And looking back over your 31 plus years, what highlights come to mind?
Oh, well, I think reaching some of those milestones, the 1,000 programs. In actual fact, it's probably a few more. There are a few I didn't count. I went away on a holiday at one stage, but I left some tapes for people to play, so I didn't count those amongst the editions. But and there's been a couple of times when the program hasn't gone to air because of things like fires, I think, might be one of the things to remember. But, the thing I've done is to try to gradually improve the program, try to get local bands recorded. I've bought my own digital equipment to do that. Still got tapes at home that I haven't actually used, so there's still plenty of scope for the program.
So how do you see the work that you've done in terms of Easterly Winds and it benefiting brass bands, or brass band, the community of brass band members throughout the Outer East? How important has it been for that community?
There are very few such programs. The ABC used to have one. Actually, the gentleman that was doing it was from England at the end, the last presenter of it, and he came from Western Australia, and one day they just said to him, don't come Monday. And so the ABC is very rarely broadcasting that sort of thing. You have other community stations that are doing it, but they're all doing it in their own individual area, basically. Mm. There are other programs that are more general, but sadly they tend to play marches. And bands play marches very well, as I say, but that's not all they play. So you'll find that in my program there might be a march, there will be a march, but lots of other music of totally different character, music from the classics, music from pop, that sort of thing.
I don't think that there's any concern that somebody's going to come up to you, Ian Douglas, and say, don't come in on Monday. You're welcome to stay for as long as you like.
Well, thank you, Roger. That's great news. But I think the other thing has been a number of those other programs have been either run by people like myself who are what you might call aficionados, or they've been run by people who've been press ganged into doing it. There was one presenter on another station who was a piano player. Another one is an organist. So they know music, but they don't. They're not familiar with the struggles of brass banding and how it's done and so on at the grassroots level. So that's what I think I bring to the program, that I've got that knowledge that other people perhaps don't have.
We started this interview, Ian, in the era of the Crystal Set. And, of course, since then the media landscape has evolved at an amazing rate and continues to do so. Where do you think community radio, and of course Radio Eastern is all part of that, where do you think that community radio fits into that landscape?
Well, everything's going digital. Things have gone online, of course, which Radio Eastern has done. It concerns me that eventually the government will find the bandwidth and spectrum that is something that they want, because they'll be able to sell it, and therefore the station will find itself simply online, which I think is not a great feel. The broadcasting on the FM band is something that everybody can relate to, I think. I mean, it's great that you can listen to Easterly Winds in London or Belgrade or wherever you want to. I haven't had any people who corresponded with me and said, thanks for the program, I'm living in London, but I'm sure they're there, you know, and they're listening.